reviewing the Cray Brothers biopic Legend. So we're going to do this whole thing in an incomprehensible East End Cockney accent, if no one minds. No, seriously, there were times during this film that I was just like, maybe a subtitle or
and
two.
I had the unfortunate pleasure of, I saw it at the Austin Film Festival.
I'm going to call your biography unfortunate pleasure now.
Yeah. I saw it at the Austin Film Festival, and I normally love the Paramount Theater, and I don't know if it's maybe the thick Cockney accents, but I was just like, have the acoustics in the Paramount always
sometimes
been really
the sound there okay. can leave a little to be desired. And yeah, if you're straining to hear things like, you know, a lot of the, I would some might say the majority of the movies that I've seen at the Paramount, I've seen before. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter. I'm like, yes, I'm following this along fine. But there were some points, especially at the beginning before you get acclimated, if you're an American, especially if, you know, and I've got a lot of experience with English accents. And
yeah.
There, you know, the East End Cockney accent is a muddy one at best. And there were times that I was just like, what is he saying? But that's neither here nor there, because you'll get plenty of time to understand these accents, as this movie is interminable.
Yeah.
it comes in at nearly 2 hours and 50 minutes,
yeah.
at least. Maybe a little over. I think maybe even 218. And it does not need to be that long by any stretch of the imagination.
No, you get the sense that, I mean, there has to have been an interesting aspect to these guys' lives to build their career and their sort of mythos as they did.
Which this movie completely fails to explore.
Yeah,
and it's so, you know, because the selling point of this movie is that it takes place in the swinging 60s London, in the nightclub scene, you know, where the Rolling Stones, the Beatles were just exploding, and you know, the English invasion was going on, and London was just the center of culture.
Yeah.
And these two twins were nightclub owners and gangsters. They were called the Cray Twins, real people. You know, they had these, like, totally terrifying reputations. Nobody fucked with them. They ran a couple of clubs in London, and they were just, you know, they were the gangster princes of the city.
Yeah.
And they are in this movie. They are both played by Tom Hardy, who, because of twins. And, you know, he plays Reggie, who's the suave, sophisticated man among town and kind of the brains of the operation. And then Ronnie, who is, not to put too fine a point on it, really fucking schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And violently psychotic as yeah. well. And so you get these two very different characters played by the same actor. And Hardy nails it. He does a really good job. Unfortunately, they forgot to put anything interesting for him to do in this movie, and instead they rely on the most obvious gangster movie 101 tropes, you know, like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and there is nothing in this movie, absolutely nothing, through the whole 2.25 hours that you don't see fucking coming from a mile away.
Yeah, you get the moments of Ronnie being the crazy one, of him doing crazy things, and if you like gangster movies, and if you like the gore and violent aspect of those movies, like, it's there,
sure,
a little bit, but
I mean, it never gets to even, like, you know, it certainly doesn't get to, like, Goodfellas level,
right.
and not even, you know, Godfather levels, if you really want to make the argument.
Because I'm curious, in a little more detail, what is the plot of this film?
The plot is, it like I said, it's gangster 101. First of all, it starts out with narration by Reggie's wife. And she, you know, it starts out with a montage of them driving through London. She's like, oh, they were kings of the city, and this is how it happened. And then it basically shows, you know, Reggie being kind of a small-time gangster. He gets his brother out of jail because Ronnie has gone to jail, but he's been transferred to a mental institution, and he intimidates a psychiatrist into, you know, getting him out. And then there's kind of a short bit where they basically take out the Southies, who are the South End London gang that heretofore has been running shit. And once they do that, well, now they're princes of the city. Reggie ends up going to prison from an old rap, which they never explore. They're just like, oh, and then there was this old thing that I had hovering over my head, and I had to go to jail. And Ronnie ends up fucking everything up as far as the club because he's crazy.
Yeah. It's supposed to detail, like, the rise and fall, but it's pretty much all the rise. And the fall really kind of happens mostly out of one singular incident that was just kind of a loss of momentary loss of control. And it's like...
Right.
And it's as quickly as it fell, it's just... That's kind of where it's interesting. Like,
I don't know why there are
more interesting things to see.
Yeah, then there. And here's the thing, you know, one of the weakest points of this is, like I said, it starts out with narration by Reggie's wife, who he was only married to for 8 weeks, by the way, just saying. They were a long-term couple, but still. Her narration, and to an extent her character, is just like, I don't know, why should I be interested in this love story between her and Reggie when the only interesting bits in this movie are when the two twins are around?
Yeah.
And they keep on, the movie keeps on returning to them over and over again, and just using basically Ronnie's character as like, oh, and here's a little crazy spice, and here's a little bit more crazy spice. And the relationship between Reggie and Fran, his wife, it's you know, it's dull as dishwater. There's absolutely nothing there. You know, towards the end, things get abusive. There's a completely fucking unnecessary rape scene, which drove me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And then I don't give a fuck. This is a spoiler. And if you're still, after all of this, considering seeing this movie anywhere other than Netflix, hey, spoiler alert, fast forward. But they do this... And it's kind of new, but it's already so old hat, it just makes me immediately go, fuck you, which is where she's like, well, I'm the one narrating this, so you think I made it out alive. But I didn't. Ta-da! I actually committed suicide. Ha-ha. And it's just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you for insulting my intelligence.
Well, let me ask you here, Christopher Eccleston, who was, of course, the first Doctor Who in the reboots, plays what the super detective superintendent supposed to take down the craze. Is he given anything interesting to do?
No, he's a bumbling incompetent for the most part. And, like, you know, he kind of... There's no detective work. There's no, like, you know, bad guys versus good guys vibe going on here at all. And, in fact... Most of the time Eccleston is on screen, he's comic relief. There's a lot of waste town in this. The leader of the South game is Paul Bettany, who's a fucking great actor.
Yeah.
Amazing. And like, they literally have him in, like, two fucking scenes. And I'm like, why did you pay this guy's check?
Well, yeah. Chaz Palminteri.
It was like I said, Chaz Palminteri, you pull him out of whatever he was doing and doesn't really do anything.
He's playing, like, the head of the Philadelphia mob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who comes in to, like... Like, be the one to set up to finance.
As they manage to get their fingers into the pie of London,
right?
Meyer Lansky, the famous Jewish gangster, sends over a delegation from Philadelphia that goes, hey, Mr. Lansky, he wants to make, you know. Swinging London is, you know, the center of the world right now. We want to make this into what Las Vegas is.
Yeah.
You know, we want to have, like, this, you know, under-the-table gambling happen everywhere. We want to run their hookers and all this stuff. You know, you guys run it for us, and we'll you know, after Mr. Lansky gets his take, we'll split the rest 50-50. What do you say?
Totally fascinating aspect of the craze mythos that just kind of, it's just like, yeah, we're going to do this, and then we're not really going to show you us doing it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Chaz Palminteri is in two scenes. Even one of the two scenes, they completely miss an opportunity to do something very fascinating. And granted, it was in the 60s, so it was probably even more fascinating then. But Ronnie, the more psychotic of the two brothers, is gay and completely
open. Actually bisexual, but they decided to make him gay in this because bi erasure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, flat out tells Chaz Palminteri, like, he prefers the company of men, and he parades around town with the... I mean, it never really says...
Yeah, he's got two guys that are obviously, you know, at least one of them is sharing his bed, and yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, maybe it's because he was a really scary guy, and nobody really thought to, like, say anything to him, or, like, there's one scene where, like, somebody calls his brother a poofter, which is a funny British word for gay, I guess. But other than that one scene,
call him a bundle of sticks or a cigarette. So, yeah.
Other than that one scene, it's just like, explore that more. Like, that's really interesting. Like there's ultraviolet gangster who's gay.
One of the first scenes after Ronnie gets out of jail, like Reggie takes his you know then fiance Fran to meet him. He's living in a trailer in the fucking woods, and they never say word one about why are you doing this? Are you just on a camp out? Is this where you live? Because nobody will rent to you because you killed people. I don't know.
So it feels like more of a list of details than actually.
It is a
plot.
And once again, you know, and I've been saying this a lot in reviews about biopics lately, but I don't know if this is that people were just like, well, we've got to play this really close to the chest and nail the details, which I don't even feel they did that strongly. But it's like, guys, I would love to have seen what somebody like Danny Boyle or Guy Ritchie or any of the many talented,
or JC was saying Todd Haynes's take, where it's
from
the viewpoint of the gay Craig.
At this point,
it's going to be called Gay Craig.
I would watch the John Waters Craig film in a heartbeat before this fucking thing, because there's absolutely no flavor. It just ends up just being this tepid, you know, every gangster story you've ever seen soup, and you know it's like, dude, there's not even salt in this. It's just dull as dishwater.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because obviously some real talent in it. And, you know, Tom Hardy slugging it out in what would have been, you know, dream casting for you know, any writing and directing team that was worth their salt. And in this, it just, you know, the brothers almost become window dressing to this listless, like, love story, you know, bullshit, you know, wannabe gangster epic. And
yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, no.
It's to Tom Hardy's credit. I mean, this isn't Armie Hammer playing two of the same person, essentially. It just happens to be two of them, like in Social Network. The two brothers are completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I mean, it's brilliant seeing Tom sort of act against himself. Like, that is a funny moment where, like, one of them pulls out a gun and he has to, like, put his hand and, like, no, put that away. And it's like, those are good, well-done moments, but there's just
yeah, absolutely. And, there's never a doubt when you see one or the other on portrayal on the screen, who's who. He really nails these, you know, very particular differences, you know, right down to the way that they speak. And, you know, it's great. And, you know, every now and then when they play with that, like, when they show, like, the different relations that they have with their parents. It's awesome, but they do that like once.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, we're right back to the love story, and, you know, I guess the moral is don't fall in love with a gangster or you'll end up committing suicide.
Surprisingly, this is written and directed by Brian Helgeland? I'm never sure how to pronounce his name, but who wrote L.A. Confidential.
Right.
He wrote Mystic River. He wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Master. Forget about that last one.
Yeah. He's reverting to that.
But, you know, the effect of a period piece. And like L.A. Confidential, which is one of the greatest, like, crime.
It's astounding, but, you know, maybe he just needs to stick to adapting James Ellroy novels and staying out of spinning things out of, if not whole cloth, at least, like, it happened in the real world, because they're, like I said, fucking biopics. You know, he tries to wind all of the stuff in, which actually did happen, but it's just like, where's your fucking through line?
Yeah.
You know? And real life doesn't have through lines. Real life is not a narrative form. You know, that's why we invent stories. And, God, these characters are so fun. I really wish they had had some fun with them.
Yeah. JC, what are your final thoughts on this?
I kind of, echoing Bo's thoughts about how he seems to say the same thing about biopics, I feel like I say the same thing about them, too, in that, To be characters like these, like to have established, you know, I mean, they're legendary gangsters, there had to have been interesting aspects of their lives. And too many times lately, I find in biopics saying, like, there's interesting things there. You just, for whatever reason, didn't want to show us them. And that's a huge bummer. I had really high hopes for this one, just based off of the potential of Tom Hardy alone.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of Emily Browning. I actually have been ever since Lemony Snicket.
Who plays his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the narrator.
Yeah. ever since she was in the Lemony Snicket movie. I've been a huge fan of hers. I think she's really talented. Even though she's narrating and she's on screen a lot, it's weird how someone can be on screen a lot and not really be given much to do.
Yeah, like, which is sad because, like, you know, yeah, she's arguably it's arguably her and Tom Hardy playing Reggie are the stars of this, and Tom Hardy playing Ronnie is a supporting character, yeah. Which is just like, all right, that should tell you that maybe you're not doing this right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a big disappointment in the end. I'd probably give it 5 out of 10 really bad teeth that Ronnie was wearing.
Yeah, major disappointment. This was one of the first films that I jumped in review after my hiatus that I'd been on, and I was really looking forward to it, and like literally an hour and 50 minutes in this, I was just looking at my watch going, oh my God, when is this going to be over? Just because it's just, like I said, it's interminable. They explore all of this shit that is completely unmoving and beside the point, and they don't focus on any of the stuff that could have been huge strengths. It's just, you know, by the end, you're just like, God, I'm really sad that I sat through this wasted opportunity of a film.
And yeah, the pacing, like, it commits the sin.
Oh, my God.
You're about an hour and a half in, and you're like, oh, I'm kind of bored by this, and it seems like there's a whole lot left to... Oh, it's over. All right.
Yeah, it's 2 hours and 11 minutes, so, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Save on this one. If you really like tepid gangster movies, well, go watch it on Netflix or, you know, I don't know. Go see a matinee if you're that desperate. I give it 3.5 dog-eared copies of an old Mario Puzo novel.
So what you're saying is the expression cray-cray.
Wait, that would have been a perfect fucking tagline for this movie, and they even blew that!
Yeah.